Welcome. You are listening to You Watch the Show, the number one podcast on the internet talking about everyone's favorite show, Yu Yu Hakusho. My name is Alex, and I'm joined by...
I thought you were going to introduce us.
No, I thought you would say your name.
I think we should restart this, because Jesus Christ. I thought you were also going to introduce your name.
Keep going.
It's fine, go.
I think it's great for our rapport with the audience.
Is it my turn? Hi, I'm Pat.
And finally...
Oh, I'm Dan. Nice to meet you guys.
Oh, there he is.
Howdy.
Thank you for joining us on this journey of all things Yu Yu Hakusho. This is our first time trying something like this, so it'll probably sound like shit, but we will just, you know, you'll bear with us and it's fine. The way we were going to sort of talk about this was going to go around in a circle and first sort of say, like, what our experience is with the show. You know, like, when we sort of first watched it, or if we've kept up or returned to it or anything like that. And maybe we could actually maybe start with Scott, who I think probably has, like, the most extensive experience with it out of us.
Sure. So I am the weirdo that back in 2003 was spending between $30 and $40 for a 3-4 episode DVD every month at Suncoast Video. In order to watch this show, I discovered it through the Shonen Jump magazine that was going at the time, and I got way too deep into this. I spent way too much money. I played the card game. I owned action figures. So I'm the closest thing to an expert, but I also have the memory of a goldfish. So basically every episode is like a new thing for me again.
I have a very distinct memory. Scott and I are brothers. Growing up, that when you started getting all those DVDs, it was just a massive pile, and you eventually got like a tower DVD holder just for Yu Yu Hakusho DVDs.
Oh, it's a great show. It deserved it. Now you can watch the entire show on a streaming service for like $10 a month.
Whatever happened to those DVDs? Are they still in your parents' house? Or
I believe I donated all of them eventually. I own the series on Blu-ray, though. It came out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, you got that. I feel like you had that pretty early on, too. I feel like I watched an episode or two after you got the set. So my experience is very similar to my brother's. I think I saw a little bit from the DVDs you had, but I also saw it on Toonami or whatever. It was probably Toonami. So I like saw it in sort of a weird order, and then knew you had like the DVDs. And I actually never finished it, even though I watched a lot of it. I think after like the third arc, I kind of lost track of what was going on. And yeah, I was, you know, actually Ryan started watching this again recently. And then that was kind of what got me into like, oh, I should, you know, try a few episodes.
Was it on Toonami or was it on Adult Swim?
It was totally on Toonami.
Okay.
I think it was on both at various points, but it definitely started on Toonami. And the only reason I know this, and Alex probably doesn't remember this story, I accidentally bought the edited version of one of the DVDs and had to return it for the unedited version at a point because they were putting out the television edit onto DVD at the time as well.
Man,
God.
Back in 2003, you had such a...
I'm just thinking the concept of buying edited anime right now seems so confusing.
Well, you can go, like, you know, I bet you could still go to Walmart and buy, like, you know, if you want to buy, like, a rap CD with edited lyrics, you go to Walmart or something,
I guess that's still a thing. Anyway, maybe Danny, would you like to say what your experience is?
Sure. So I remember very distinctly watching generally the first two seasons on Toonami. They were on in the afternoon, I remember. I remember being very angry at one point when there's an episode where Yusuke goes into like a cave to train with Genkai, and I'll look at me naming characters before they come up, and it like ended on a cliffhanger, and my parents were like, no, you can't watch anymore, we have to go get a haircut, and I was very upset. Which is still a memory that I have, you know, when your parents...
And this was probably late enough that like you may not have had like a VCR you could have just popped a tape into, like VCR.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know how to work stuff like that. I was in elementary school. I was probably like fourth or fifth grade.
That's incredible what our brain remembers and what it does not.
But I know, so I watched generally up to like the Dark Tower, missing episodes here or there, but generally having an idea. I'm sorry, the Dark Tournament. Went back in either early college or late high school, and I read it on one of those like manga panda websites or whatever.
Oh,
where you can read what happens. And then I sort of haven't really thought about it since, until you guys were talking about doing this podcast. You know, I've had the Blu-rays on my Amazon wish list, but always like, this would be like a fun, frivolous purchase. But then we started talking about it, and I then bought season one. So for me.
Oh, yeah.
It's good to own seasons of anime. It makes you feel more powerful.
Yeah, anime figures, Blu-rays. I'm a real weeb now.
It's all coming together.
Congratulations on the midlife crisis.
Ryan, would you like to say your part?
Sure. So I also watched it in elementary school, either on Toonami or Adult Swim. We're not really too sure on that yet. If I did watch it on Toonami, it was either before or after Zoids. And I kind of, well, first off, Zoids.
Zoids.
And I kind of fell out with Yu Yu Hakusho, but I kept watching Zoids. And
Zoids.
So recently I was on a plane trip to Lithuania, and I was trying to look for things to download on Netflix so I could watch it in the air, which ended up not working.
Mm-hmm.
But I found Inuyasha, and I found a couple other things, but I remembered Yu Yu Hakusho, and that was not on Netflix. So I found it on Hulu and started watching it on Hulu. So look at me name dropping a whole bunch of brands that are not paying us.
I was going to say, like, as soon as you started thinking about Inuyasha, like, if I were to start thinking about Inuyasha, I would just drop whatever I was doing and just start watching Inuyasha. So.
Oh, yeah. It's very fun. I also, I brought up to Krevitz, or Alex, that once we're done this, we need to start Inuyasha,
yeah,
a podcast dedicated to Inuyasha.
I do like that also.
I think I'm the only one on this show with no connection to Inuyasha.
It's just like...
It's not good, but it's also incredibly good.
Oh, see, I would have been Rurouni, but still.
Oh, that too.
Let's stop name-dropping a million other shows that we're never going to talk about.
I will also say, somewhat, this is another thing, but related, I promise, that I have not really watched or experienced much of Hunter x Hunter, but the little bit of it I watch and enjoy, I also like... am reminded about stuff from this, and people always talk about returning to this. So that's the creator of Yu Yu Hakusho also made Hunter x Hunter. So
you never told me that.
What? Yeah, it was. I mean, I know Scott's a little more into it, and I actually know. I think both Scott and Dan have read a lot of it.
It's also pronounced Hunter times Hunter.
I watched quite a lot of Hunter x Hunter.
Excuse me.
Stopped right before everyone says it gets incredible because I don't know. I'm weird.
I've done the same thing. That's my problem. But. Yeah, so maybe we can sort of start by just talking through the episodes. The first one, which, sorry, the other people don't remember or know what the names are of the episodes, and they're all extremely good.
Oh, no, I've got a list on my,
Well, it's episode number one, Surprise to be Dead.
I mean, who isn't?
Surprise!
It's a very good title. And so sort of the first thing that happens is... Yusuke is kind of fucking up. He's like walking down the street and like getting into fights with people immediately. He also is doing that like Slav squat thing a lot, which I guess is Japan, so not a Slav squat. And he's just like checking out girls' skirts. He's also very particular about like, he's like, oh, like this person, like I like people in green and things like that. And that's where they introduce Keiko, who beats the shit out of him immediately.
So actually, my second point is Keiko obliterates Yusuke with a slap. I feel like that's foreshadowing her strength, because like Yusuke, every once in a while he's like, Keiko is a lot stronger than me, and it's like, yeah, she is, because she can beat you up and she can beat Kuwabara up and everyone else.
I think she has giant anime hand when she does it too, so it's extra powerful.
Yeah, we should also note that, like, despite everything, like, it's weird, like, this show aired in the early 90s, but, like, in the early part of the 90s that were, like, technically the 80s, I guess. Because, yeah, he just casually just goes up, just grabs her skirt, lifts it up, observes, like, you can't do that anymore.
The thing that I really remember is from this like very beginning, where she's like, how come you're not wearing the same thing everyone else? Is like, I look better in green anyway. It's like, you say, a 14-year-old with no job gets custom school uniforms in a completely different color than everyone.
Where did he get that?
All right. I think I know the answer.
Oh, thank God. The lore master.
Thank God. Please illuminate.
It's the summer outfit.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's just he wears the wrong color for the wrong. I don't really know.
If anything, it could be just like he's poor and he doesn't own two uniforms. Like he only owns one of them. You could read it like that as well.
Oh, I thought it was like a flex because he got custom clothing.
Oh, in fact, so it's the complete opposite.
I do like that headcanon. Yeah, this has been talked about before on the side many times, but there's extremely good fashion in the show.
Yes.
Not a whole lot of it early on, but. My notes definitely include me going like, damn, that's a tight fit right there. Or those shoes are dope. Anyway, the other thing I had to note on this is that Keiko's friends call him the Great Urameshi, which I thought seemed excessive. Like he's supposed to be scary, but a bit much. And then Yusuke's wandering around and some bullies are bullying a kid and they're saying they're his cousin or that they are him. I forget which.
They're his cousin.
Okay, cousins. And it's just this, like, then Yusuke gets mad at it. I don't really understand exactly why the other teacher, I think his name is Iwamoto,
yes,
hates him so much. But he fucking despises him.
So does Akashi.
I think we find out in other episodes, they're just, like, bad teachers. They despise basically all of the kids.
You may have also missed that the principal physically assaults Yusuke at a point. Oh,
well, that was my next note, is that he gives him a noogie. It's just a nice noogie.
Again,
you know,
the 80s.
You were just saying it's the 90s. You know,
it's the 90s, you know. If a principal tried to give a noogie right now, it would... Whew.
So there's a part where Takanake is... Well, first off, he's just trying to help.
Right.
But he's also pulling Yusuke by his ear. Oh, at which point, yes. Yusuke deattaches the fake ear from his head. Where did he get a fake ear?
He's like a prankster.
The old false ear trick. It's classic. Yes. So he escapes Takamaki, who is ultimately kind of nice to him. He will also show up again. The next note I have is Yusuke's mom living that neat life, which I think is that like he comes home and she's been sleeping until like noon or something. So yeah, it seems that his mom doesn't really work and may drink a lot. There's a lot of unspoken things.
My reading was she goes out and parties all night and then comes home and sleeps all day.
I do wonder how the money would work in that situation.
Well, they certainly don't have enough to buy Yusuke more uniforms.
Or custom fits.
And his dad, is it ever mentioned what happens with his dad, or is he just absent? He's either dead or just gone.
I want to say that's like a plot thing much later
on. Yeah, that'll come out. That'll come up around episode 40 of our podcast.
Oh, well, now I'm excited.
I know eventually, like way down, there's talks about ancient ancestors to do spoilers, but I don't remember there being anything specifically about his exact father.
We'll meet him.
Okay.
I don't even think I'd be spoiling it because I think I'm wrong, but I remember it being like a big, like, that's it moment. This is also the introduction of Kuwabara, because Yusuke like angrily walks out. He has a very funny, angry walk, and he walks out of the house, is walking around mad, and he gets confronted by Kuwabara, and some extremely goofy shit starts playing. Like the music is just really, I don't know if it's a theme, it just sounds really stupid. He also threatens to beat Yusuke up so bad that even kittens won't look at him, which felt like a particularly cutting insult.
Well, there's payoff for that later. Because
yeah, Kuwabara, he loves those cats.
Kuwabara is a huge fan of kittens.
Oh, wow. You know what? I'd forgotten that.
Even I knew that.
He also proudly announces that he has a 156 loss streak, which, like, not great.
Washington Generals of whatever town they're in.
I don't think I would shout about losing that many times. I would. Well,
no, the impression I get is that he only ever really loses to Yusuke. But like, as we'll talk about later, there are interactions with rival gangs from other schools, and they all seem to have significantly more respect for Kuwabara.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to respect Kuwabara, so there must be other stuff happening.
Right, Yusuke has no respect for him, but I think everyone else generally does. He also has friends who like him a lot.
That is true. I do like the friends episode in this one. I think the concept is hilarious, but it's also very cute. And then we get to the kid playing in the street scene, which is kind of like the whole he ends up dying. There's a kid playing with a ball, and he kicks it down the street, and Yusuke tells him to stop, and then plays with the kid, does like a really weird, stupid dance thing, and then he tells the kid to be careful. And then I think like literally a second after he tells the kid to be careful, the kid immediately turns back into traffic. So you
well, that car was flying.
That car, they were. It shows like the inside of the car at one point or something. It was something weird was going on.
Yeah, so like it's a dude, his lady. That dude is on the wrong side of the car if this takes place in Japan.
Oh.
Oh yeah. Sure. Sure.
Cultural competency noted.
He's got an import.
Driving fast. But I just appreciated the kid like just immediately disregarded what he said and nearly killed himself. So Yusuke jumps out and then comes back to where the episode started, and then Botan is introduced and it goes to commercial with the extremely cute commercial animation.
Yes. So first off, gonna say we're all watching the dub, I believe.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Botan's accent incredible and sometimes not there. I'm not really sure what she's trying to do. But
it doesn't sound normal.
I always think it's somewhere between like British and Australian, which are already kind of close. It just, I don't know. It's very, it's like the most, like if you had to cast someone to do a foreign accent, you would want that one.
I guess, but she's also, she introduces herself as like the guardian of the River Styx. And it's just very funny to think that like the Grim Reaper guardian of the River Styx is like a fucking dumbass Australian accent.
And a pink kimono.
She is not dumb. How dare you?
So I actually looked up, like, so our interpretation of the Grim Reaper is completely different than how she looks. I stole this from some website. I forget what it is. So the Grim Reaper in Japanese culture is called the Shinigami. Oh. And it's so in our culture, the Grim Reaper is regarded as a terrifying being, whereas the Shinigami are regarded as agents who facilitate the smooth running of the natural cycle of life. Shinigami merely ensure that people die at the appointed time and then escort their souls into the afterlife. Oh. So like everything that the Grim Reaper is, the Shinigami is not, it feels like.
I feel like Botan would be great for like a conversation, like as she's guiding you there, just like, you know, 20, 30 minutes just talking about anything.
So you mean that my interpretation of Botan going like, that's not a scythe. This is a scythe. That's totally wrong.
That's a completely incorrect
reading. No, she has an oar because she's a river person.
This matches with my experience with Death Note, so I'm satisfied with that.
So when I was looking up Shinigami, I saw that there is Shinigami in Death Note, although I haven't watched it.
Oh, need to watch the live action movie. I think you would too.
I'm only going to watch the Netflix live action one.
It's a good one.
Scott is a defender of that film.
Oh, never mind.
Anyway, come back from commercial. Botan's reading the guidebook. I guess like it has like specific details of everything that will happen.
At one point, I know she dunks on him and is like, if you didn't jump in the car, the kid would have actually gotten less injured.
I love that.
That comes up later, and I think she's like, yeah, I really didn't want to tell you this. But she then says it wasn't expected, and if you do some stuff, maybe you can go back to life. Yusuke immediately goes, he's got no regrets in life, and he's ready to die, which I was like, damn. He's 16 years old.
He's like a SoundCloud rapper.
Incredibly relatable, though.
I do feel that. And I did write it down. The wording is very strange to me. Botan describes what he has to do come back as, to quote, accept an ordeal to get your life back. I can see why one might decline that. It just, I don't like ordeals.
Yeah.
And if you already have no regrets.
And I think one thing you may have glossed over just a little bit is like Yusuke's first concern when he realizes he's dead is he wants to know if the kid was okay. Oh, and when he sees that the kid is okay, that's when he's like, all right, I got no regrets. I'm good.
That is true. He is a good boy. I think, this is where Botan talks about that he would have been fine. So I think it sort of jumps around. People find out that Yusuke has passed. and they go to the wake at Yusuke's house. Also, oh, side note, Botan's flying on her, like, oar thing, and Yusuke is sitting, like, crisscross style, just floating around in the sky, which I really appreciated how little it looked like a normal thing. There are a lot of kids at the wake who are laughing at Yusuke, which seems rough.
That, well, especially because, like, the story builds them up to think, like, they're all scared of him, and
right.
They like, immediately are laughing at him.
Yeah, I just surprising. Laughing at a dude's wake. I feel like you can laugh outside of the wake, but at it, that's
yeah. That's there are exactly 2.5 people at that wake that are taking it well, which is Keiko, who is, you know, she is inconsolable. You have Kuwabara, who's just like, let him out of there. I need to fight him.
Yeah,
and then we have the principal, who's like, listen, we could have done better. But also, he kind of was like an asshole, but we could have done a better job.
Kuwabara feels like it's a trope. Like, they're purposely playing off of a trope that, I mean, I'm not on TV tropes right now, but it's like, I never got to fight him. It feels like a very honor thing that they're just sort of poking fun at.
He also has to have, like, 2 of his friends restrain him because he's freaking out at a wake trying to fight the corpse.
It would be something that in real life, if we were at a wake, it would be like a horrifying thing. Like we would be talking about it years later.
Mm-hmm. When you die, I'm going to fight you.
All of those things happen as they describe. Most notable, Kuwabara is mad and that the teachers are shitty. But then the last people walk in and it's the kid and the mom that helped save, or that Yusuke saved. And it's like very cute. The mom doesn't want to like fully explain to the kid that he's dead. And they do the classic like, oh, when can we play? Because it's the kid that doesn't understand death.
Yeah, I wrote down the kid's quote, which is, quote, thank you for saving me and for making faces.
Aww.
He did make faces. But it's a very cute, very wholesome, like, oh, this is too sad. Every time it gets me. I don't know why.
I thought extremely notable that the guy driving the car is nowhere to be found. He's not held accountable for this at all.
Yeah, that's brutal.
Oh, he comes back.
Does he?
No, he never comes back.
And yes, so that ends. Yusuke sees the kid and he's like, okay, I will do this. And they go to the spirit world. And that's where the first episode ends. Overall, I thought it was like, it got me interested in it pretty early on. And when I was rewatching it too, I like watched first episode and was already to go to the second.
Yeah, like I don't think like, you know, in American TV we use the term like this was the pilot episode, and that doesn't really exist in anime, but this was like a fairly effective pilot episode where it leaves you with a bunch of questions, but you know, it leaves you ready to come back and watch more.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, it's a good first episode. It's radically tone different, but all of these first, well, I'm sure that will be a thing that we talk about in detail. These first few episodes are radically different in tone and sort of like genre than what the show ends up becoming, but yeah. It's good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it also like I feel like there's like people who don't know anime that well that sometimes want to find stuff to like get into it, and this always feels like a safe like first recommendation or like an early recommendation of like It's not that weird or anything like that, and just like a good story.
We save the weirdness for next episode.
Yes, it does certainly get weird. Episode 2, Koenma appears, is the title. That begins with them going into the spirit world, and Botan's trying to explain King Yama or Yama. I always forget. And Yusuke is imagining him to be sort of a big monster thing.
He's trying to come up with a strategy as to how he would beat him in a fight.
Oh yeah, I do.
Out loud.
I feel like he's like, I have to kill him. There's just no other way. They also arrive through what they call the Gateway of Decision, which is also, I thought, a great name that I would like to visit there very much. And then they get there, and it turns out that the afterlife or hell is just a giant bureaucracy.
Well, the first thing that one of the demons says is like, they're going through the Gateway Decision. He's thinking about how horrifying King Yama's looking. The doors open, and then I don't know what accent this is, but the demon screams out, I need information on Mr. Gen in 2 minutes.
Yeah, no, there's like a stock exchange photo. I really don't understand.
The culture of this place. First of all, I want to say of the episodes we're talking about today, this one was by far my favorite. This is a very good episode.
It is very good.
They're all wearing loincloths and working in like an office that's extremely hectic. I think it's very funny that only Botan and Koenma actually wear clothes. But yeah, it's great. The meeting of Koenma is incredible.
Yes.
I feel like Botan could have warned Yusuke that he was going to be talking to a child. She should have like a grasp on Yusuke's demeanor and know that he was going to be that disrespectful.
Yeah, she had like all that book of knowledge on him. It could have said that. As Danny indicated, Yusuke dunks on Koenma a bunch. And then Koenma is King Yama's son? Yeah, his son. So he's the one that is the boss there. So Yusuke's making fun of him because he looks like a baby. So then Koenma pulls his Frank from Sunny out and just presents him with an egg. He says, here's your ordeal. And he hands Yusuke a golden egg.
Does he have to eat it raw? Or?
He's trying times. So he then explains the concept of a spirit beast, which kind of comes back, kind of doesn't. I don't really understand it, how it ultimately goes. But basically, if Yusuke is good and does good things, it will be like a nice creature that will help him get back to life. And if he's bad, it will be evil and eat him.
It's also extremely vague what good and bad are to this spirit egg.
Yeah, like what is its world concept?
Like, is it just vibes, or is it like, you know, good deeds or whatnot?
He's a ghost and he can't really interact in the world. Like, you think he can't really do many deeds at all.
Well, now I'm just wondering, like, what his personal philosophy is on goodness. Does Koenma believe in property as a concept that would affect moral good or moral? Anyway,
no, we're
capitalism.
Anyway,
hey, at one point we find out in like an episode or two that they're reading Heart of Darkness in
school. Oh yeah, I wrote that down.
They're not too old, like too insignificant questions.
I do want to look up if that's like localized in a different way or if they actually used Heart of Darkness. So he's explained what Spirit Beast is, and at the same time he's also told that his body can't be destroyed. His mother is going to cremate him, so he has to begin avoiding that. Where they casually reveal that ghosts can talk to people in their sleep, and that they're like, oh yeah, like just go like talk to your mom, that's fine. But Yusuke's mother is just going off. She's drinking and crying. And Yusuke says she will not fall asleep anytime soon.
Yeah, she also notes, for example, in her grief that, quote, you got hit by a car. Strong people live through that. You know, just some real victim blaming going on.
Yeah, that's just, it's very strange.
You know, she's speaking, she's grieving. You know, we're not going to judge her that harshly. Also, it's not like she knows, like, he can hear her.
I just like that Yusuke is like, yeah, this isn't gonna work. So then they visit Keiko, who is a real one. She is crying in her sleep over Yusuke, who tries to interact with her. He weirdly he's still like been sitting crisscross flying around the sky, and now he sits crisscross on her.
I also have that note. I found that very strange.
Like, it's just extremely normal stuff.
Just like happening. Sit beside her or something.
It's funny because you've talked about how he squats a lot before, and you'd think he'd maybe squat more as a ghost, but he never squats as a ghost.
No, not once. I guess it would look strange. Anyway, so it's very, he goes into her dream. It's very like shoujo romance anime-y. There's like some rainbows and some silhouettes. Turns out other people are dreaming of Yusuke, such as Kuwabara. And also there's like a little thing where Kuwabara, like, I don't really understand what happens. He just like suddenly like says, I feel a spirit. And someone's like, oh yeah, he's.
It's his tickle.
His tickle. Yeah. I guess is that the term.
Well, they talk about how Kuwabara is like extremely clairvoyant and apparently has been like attacked by old grannies.
Yeah.
That would explain a lot.
The cougars are really after Kuwabara at all times.
I don't think it's quite like that.
This is just a thing that Kuwabara is generally used to. And like, it happens enough that his friends are like, oh yeah, this is just like what happens. And we still like him. And we still want to be the leader of our gang, despite the fact that he gets a tickle.
Right, like I think if I was in high school and someone explained that situation to me, I'd be like, you're insane. what the fuck is wrong with you? But he still garners all this respect. Yeah, he is, even though he's a complete dumbass, he is respected. So after that, Botan continues making fun of Yusuke by doing this, like, look at me, I'm burning joke, which just felt excessive. But it's decided that he tries to go into Kuwabara, so he just kind of yeets right in there.
Well, it's because he specifically wants to make sure Keiko remembers, like, knows that it's real.
Can I just say, the word is possess, like, possession. Yeah. It's not yeeting into.
Yeah, this is really, like, invasive, just taking over his body like that.
The first thing he says is, hey, check it out, I'm inside Kuwabara's body, feeling smooth.
I don't know if that conveys.
Is this a good thing? Like, how does the egg feel about this?
I think this is definitely a moral negative.
I would agree.
Yeah, probably.
Yusuke, now empowered by being inside of Kuwabara's body and feeling smooth during it, then runs off to find Keiko, and he busts into her parents'. It's a restaurant, I believe, or like a bakery. Okay. Breaks in the restaurant, and Keiko's parents say that, specifically say that they tolerate a lot, but they will not tolerate bad manners.
I love how protective they are of their daughter and of Yusuke's spirit, because they absolutely do not want any of his shit. And I believe they throw him out.
Yeah, they really...
They threaten him with a knife.
Yeah.
They are not fucking around. Then there's a fight, but I don't even remember... Oh, no, they want to fight Kuwabara, and Yusuke is just like, God damn it, why does Kuwabara get in fights with everyone? I did note that this fight is, like, barely animated. It's, like, three drawings that just kind of flash at different times.
It's the series of random battles you have, like, in a JRPG when you're trying to get to, like, one end of a room to another, and you just hit, like, a random battle every three steps. That's what these are.
It was like... When I started watching this again, I watched some of the Dark Tournament, and I watched one episode of the fight, and was like, oh, this is, like, really cool and well animated, and then this is just, like, a slideshow. But it does... It's
very, like, 60 Batman. Like, bam. Biff. Pow.
Yeah. So maybe as it went more fighting, they decided to do that more, but I just remember being really, like, confused why it looked that bad. He gets scarred and hurt, and his face is so ugly it scares away Keiko's friends. Which is damn, like, a lot. And then this thing comes up, which I've talked about with Scott before, where Yusuke in Kuwabara's body needs to have Keiko realize it's him, and he needs to think and reflect, like, what is something Keiko and I have that, like, she would only recognize as something between us, like, beyond who I physically am or anything like that. Yusuke, in this moment of reflection, decides the only thing he can think of to express that of their relationship is to just sexually harass her.
Just, like, rope her. Just cop a feel.
Yeah, just, like, yeah, like, it's really just their relationship is a sexual assault.
It works, though, I mean, is the thing.
It does work.
The aims do not, like, justify the means.
No, Keiko definitely
is way too good for Yusuke.
So it works. But, you know, it does say quite a lot about the relationship that we're supposed to care quite, like, you're supposed to really care about this relationship. And, you know, it's not a good relationship. Very much not so. And it's, remember, too, when Kuwabara, like, Yusuke Kuwabara, there should be, like, an easy combination of their name for this. Anyway, when he goes into the restaurant, like, the parents also defend Yusuke. They're like, how dare you talk about Yusuke in front of our daughter? Like, that's our daughter's friend. And it's like... Whew.
I guess later on they show more about, like, how they do like and care, like, Yusuke is also caring, but I guess this early on it's just like, it's just a lot to be like, oh, their relationship is literally all he does is, like, assault her. So
she does say, like, you didn't have to do that, I could tell just by how you move.
It's because Keiko is too good.
Well, again, right after he does that, she turns around and slaps the shit out of him and, like, knocks him to his knees. Again, Keiko, the strongest character in this show.
Yes, 100%. It's actually really interesting how the show thinks about violence has so much less to do with, like, your physical abilities and more just, like, how much of a real one you are.
Yes.
Because, you know, when he's possessing Kuwabara, he's like, damn, I gotta stop winning all these fights. Kuwabara's getting a good reputation.
It's even more Dragon Ball than Dragon Ball. Yusuke also does the classic thing where he's like, I'm running out of time in his last like moments, which I always love.
But the sun is setting and his silhouette.
It's very beautiful. Very shoujo again. So Kuwabara regains consciousness and in his own body. Yusuke is no longer there. He just awakens to find he's being held by Keiko. He's been out for several hours at this point. He had the equivalent of just passing out and waking up, seeing he's in a strange place, and just looks around and he's like, well, at least I'm getting a hug. This seems pretty good.
It's pretty creepy, actually. He makes a very creepy face.
He makes a very creepy face.
And then she slaps him hard.
Yeah, it's a lot. And then it turns out Yusuke's body is saved because his mom said she wanted to beat his ass.
She opened up the coffin to beat him again.
Again, which implies
believing him
two times at this point. So that is where episode 2 ends, which was Danny's favorite episode, and I thought it was also very good.
It's a good episode. I love how it ends, and he's like, do you think I did a lot of good things today? And she's like, I don't know, you beat up a ton of people and just to save your body. It's not like it made anyone's life better. This is like ultimately selfish because you're trying to save your own body.
I'm trusting their moral compass more and more. Which brings us to the third episode. I don't know if we actually said at any point that we were going to do the first four.
I assumed you put it in the episode title.
3 is A Promise Between Men. This is probably my favorite of the batch. I just love stupid little friend stories like this. And it begins, of course, with Botan continuing to shit on Yusuke and saying that he's going to die a horrible death. She then proceeds to roast him for having a crush on Keiko. Botan just really coming out harsh in the beginning.
And like a few minutes later, she'll see a fight and she'll start screaming for them to go for the kidneys. Like,
yes.
Botan has like a real like mean streak to her. It's great.
Yeah, it's very vicious.
It's very... So if he does a lot of bad things, the egg is supposed to hatch into a monster that eats him. Mm-hmm. But the stakes are he's already dead. So
what if he double dead?
I'm sure what is going to happen to him. Like,
I don't think that they thought that far ahead because, well, you know, the egg thing just
like if you die,
it
as
doesn't
a ghost,
go anywhere.
Is that like super death?
I mean, yeah. We should also note that none of us here are experts in, I'm guessing, Shintoism, and they probably have some way more in depth afterlife thoughts than we do.
That's fair.
That's fair.
I agree. In the distance, we see a bridge troll man thing. It's a human being. I'm bridge troll. He's asking for money from someone to cross.
Just for $500.
Yes, I also noted that I was, again, curious what the original amount was. That seems like a lot of money.
So I switched it. He asked for 5,000 yen, which is about $50, which that's like...
That's still a lot.
I appreciate
it. A lot, but that's
you.
Like a number that you could... ask for and like someone could reasonably have.
Yes.
Let me Venmo you.
God, does that happen now? Do people get bullied into Venmoing? God, that's awful. Kuwabara and his squad come up and they are about to fight because they already don't like them. Kuwabara gets punched in the abs and does the like I'm too tough for you thing where the other guy gets hurt. And this fight does also have more animation. I did note that the last episode it was not just a slideshow again. This is where Botan screams for him to go for the kidneys.
Yeah, and I think I'm pretty sure it's explicit that Kuwabara is defending Keiko.
Yeah.
Like he feels some sort of connection for her after this. After what happened last episode.
Then it sort of goes ahead to them getting in trouble. The Akashi guy is back. He's like really fucking evil. He threatens him that like he's like, hey, you can go hungry, that's fine. Like, it is a lot.
Yeah, the teachers on this show seem like assholes.
But it's noted, like, remember, we were talking about Kuwabara was messing up. Kuwabara wins this fight. I'm pretty sure Kuwabara only loses to Yusuke.
Yeah, I think you're right. Then they sort of make a deal that he and his friend will be able to continue working and helping his family not go hungry. And the challenge they have is to not fight anyone for a week, which immediately the response is, that's impossible. His friends say he could not even go 2 hours without getting into a fight. And Kumar, I think, pushes back and says 3. And they say, no, it would definitely be under 2 hours.
Again, they're good friends. They know their friend.
But, like, man, the idea of someone... I don't know, bully culture, Japan, whatever thing, but, like, it's a lot of fighting.
It's very funny. It's also, like, it's unenforceable, because how would you know?
Well, you realize he's following them. Stalking them. Yeah. And bribing other children to fight this middle schooler. Very weird.
It's not the best. They sort of talk about...
You also forgot that they also need to all get above a 50% on the upcoming test.
No, that gets added, like, the next day.
My bad.
That's not an original stipulation. He goes, like, the other teachers, I was talking to the other teachers, and they thought I was too easy. So you also have to get a 50% or higher on, like, the science exam.
My notes here are a little, I don't exactly know what I was talking about. I have written evil-ass teachers. The Slav boys seem harsh, which I assume is more squatting people. Botan continues shitting on Yusuke and talking about how Kuwabara is good. And they talk about how it's very hard to follow the rules of this. Oh, yeah. So that's where it gets added on later, that he has to now get this test score. His friends are like, oh, we're not that far off. Like, we should be able to do it. Of course, Kuwabara is dumb as shit. Yusuke laughs, saying he's much better and got, like, I think, like, 5 points higher or something.
Yeah, I think Kuwabara, they need to get a 50 or higher. And I think Kuwabara got, like, a 7, and Yusuke gets, like, he's like, I got a 12.
Yeah, he's thrilled about that.
I think Yusuke says he got a 57.
They're both very bad.
Yeah.
I have Kuwabara's just sitting, learning about volcanoes. I think he's reading a textbook to study for their volcano exam. Kuwabara also keeps coming to school after other people beat him up and he doesn't respond. He looks fucking gross. I really don't like his face at this part.
Man, Kuwabara, you the girls who ran away from his beat up face.
I mean, that last time I could see being scared of it. This time I would absolutely run away too. It's like welts all over, blood. It's
not a fan. I'll say that, like, this sort of leads in a lot about who Kuwabara is and how he fights later on, because he's pretty chipper about this whole thing. He's like, I don't really care that I'm getting the crap beat out of me. I'm helping my friends and everything else, which, if I remember right, when the show becomes much more like a weekly fighting show, that's basically how he fights.
He's another good boy. Yu Yu Hakusho is very good at making supposedly bad boys be very nice boys, and then it's very sweet to watch them too. Everyone loves Kuwabara. A title remix plays of the Smile Bomb, the opening, which is actually will be at the beginning of this podcast and is a complete banger. Anyway, we come around to, like, studying montages and things. My favorite part was that Kuwabara is dreaming about studying. He's fallen over on his desk, and his dream is also that he's falling over on his desk. And the only difference between the dream and reality is that there's a lava lamp in the dream. which I thought was like, that's his goals, I guess. And Yusuke helps him with dream studying, which seems pretty rad.
I love when Yusuke's asking him questions and Kuwabara goes, oh, hemoglobin, I forgot.
Are you studying volcanoes and blood?
Yeah, I was just gonna ask, what class is this? Maybe some kind of biology, but that seems...
I think it's specifically like a physical science.
Well, the volcanoes would explain the lava lamp in the dream.
Real commitment to... Kuwabara gets confronted by boys again. The accents on them are wild. I say two of them that sound as like, that's definitely a New Yorker from the 1920s, and that person's extremely Italian. Yusuke also continues doing this thing where, like, he gets mad and tries punching someone and then realizing he's a ghost, which he's been for a while now. And he tries doing that, like, just punching, and, like, it's very strange. These guys really beat up Kuwabara, but it turns out okay. Like, they help to scare away, and they end up getting the test back, and they all pass the test, and it was very nice.
Well, I think you're...
not what happens at all.
I'm not sure what's happening with my notes for this section. Please,
Kuwabara failed the test.
But no, he does.
No, pass. I definitely answered the
guy. Oh, sorry. That's what I wrote on this. Okay, I fucked up and I'm missing some things. The teacher, like, doctors the score.
Yeah. Yes, Kuwabara has the big brain moment of copying his answers twice so he can look them up afterwards.
Oh, yeah, that is a big brain.
And he says that he specifically looks up and knows he passed, and then the teacher doctored the test.
You guys are skipping my favorite part, which is when Kuwabara is walking down the street studying, and thugs start running up after him, knock a girl to the ground. Hits her head.
Oh, yes.
She hits her head, gets knocked unconscious. Yusuke's like, all right, I'm gonna yeet into her.
My name is also just taking women's bodies now. Okay, Yusuke. And I did not remember what that was about. Thank you.
I should note, we were planning on recording this like 2 weeks ago, and then circumstances happened. So we all watched the show like 3 weeks ago.
We're going it's fine. It's fine. Just keep going. It's kayfabe. It's fine.
But Yusuke, in this girl's body, beats up like 3 or 4 of them. Kuwabara doesn't even notice. Yusuke leaves her body.
Very seriously.
And like, she's just standing there post-concussion, bewildered at what just happened.
I remember she's very upset. She is not happy to have wake up and like standing over a bunch of unconscious kids.
Yeah, it's a horrifying thing. Like going unconscious and waking up elsewhere. Like
I feel like that it's really bad luck for the egg.
Yeah. Again, these morals are questionable. Botan's moral compass, I trust, but others not so much.
Go for the kidneys. Don't go for the unconscious people.
Yeah, it's consent. And then, yeah, Kuwabara ends up getting the correct score. Takanaka helps make the other guy just fuck off. And they all say that they like each other, and it's very nice. So that was the third episode.
This teacher must have, like, insane tenure, because, like, I feel like if that happened, he'd be getting fired for what he did.
One would think.
It would definitely be a scandal.
Yeah. So then the last one we'll be talking about today, episode 4, is Requirements for Lovers. Man, my notes here are also kind of weak. This does include where they're reading Heart of Darkness, though. But it begins with Yusuke and Botan arguing about the egg and him trying to be good. There was something about an investigator.
Yeah, Sayaka. Another little girl shows Estigator up. Sayaka, I believe her name is.
Never back.
Her name is Sayaka.
Sayaka.
Yeah, thank you. She's a ghost girl.
Oh, yes, yes.
Ghost girl investigator who is just checking up on Yusuke.
I don't know what it is with the afterlife thing and this and it all being like children who are powerful.
Well, if I don't think she ever comes back. Is that right?
Yeah. So
I think this is a anime original character.
Yeah.
No, I mean, so she actually is in the book, because I was wondering what her character was about in the show, because she shows up for an episode and leaves. Apparently in the manga, she starts getting attracted to Yusuke.
Yeah, it should also be noted that the anime skips over a volume and a half's worth of Yusuke's adventures while he's dead, from helping a kid win a boxing fight to like more hijinks. It just skips all over that.
But also in the manga, I don't know if she's actively trying to sabotage Yusuke and Keiko. But I think that translates over to the show, where she's like, I don't see an attraction between them at all. I think he should stay dead.
Maybe she's from 2010 and she's like, their relationship seems built around him just sexually assaulting her. I don't think it's love.
2010, she's from a decade ago. From a pre-Me Too world.
Yeah. Things are definitely good in the 2010s for all people.
I meant to say 2020.
Things are even better now.
In my own head, I'm a decade behind. Oh my
God. We go to Keiko, and they are reading Heart of Darkness, which, again, I'm curious if that's what they actually read in it. If so, damn, we didn't even read that in our high school.
Yeah, I thought I made a note of this. I remember in my notes. This is incredible. That just reading out from the Heart of Darkness.
They do also establish that Keiko is like makes her friends do their homework and just not copy her. She's trying real hard. Yusuke and Botan are just sort of checking in on her. I asked, why do Yusuke and Botan look like Funko Pops in this episode? I guess they did look a little
real 2010 energy.
No, it was, well, actually, maybe for another thing, but Scott, you even like sent me that thing about different animators for the show and what their faces look like. And actually, this is probably the first show I'd like watch and realize like, huh, like, yeah, it's not consistent because different people do it. It sticks out to me. There's that one episode in the Dark Tournament where it's just completely differently animated. And this is like one of the first times I was like, oh, like it's not just a thing I watch, just stuff that happens to make it this way.
So after they're reading Heart of Darkness, Keiko's in like the hallway and a boy walks up to her and has this whole spiel about how he's fallen in love with her voice, and she just shuts him down immediately, and he is absolutely devastated.
Yeah, you talking about be. This is the most like generic, like NPC looking, like
dude.
Just no distinguishing features. It's incredible.
Like a background character in Yu-Gi-Oh, where it's like very clearly not anyone who's important.
Don't have weird hair.
And I remember specifically, he's like, that book was so boring. Like, your voice, oh, hubba hubba. And it's just, it's so funny.
I don't know if he said hubba hubba.
For Heart of Darkness in particular, though.
Right, it's just, it's so funny to think of, like, fucking Heart of Darkness to boring the shit out of these dumb middle school students.
So after this, Keiko goes to visit Yusuke's mom and immediately hits her with the, damn bitch, you live like this, looking around the house that it's all disheveled. Yusuke's mom continues to kind of suck and, like, is also a little mean to her. Keiko is continuing to try and help clean things up and, like, make sure Yusuke is okay. There's a part I just have it written as Keiko is calling him beautiful and, like, reaching out to him in some way.
Oh, is this the introduction of bowl cut Yusuke?
I think it is. This is bowl cut Yusuke.
And bowl cut Yusuke is significantly better looking than Widow's Peak Yusuke.
No, I disagree. I disagree hard.
Oh, you're so wrong, because bowl cut Yusuke makes a few appearances, and he looks very cute.
I just don't like it. It's not my taste.
I am a haircut centrist. I like all haircuts equally.
You like all you have no.
All haircuts matter.
I was no like I want to say something. Even maybe like a third of the time, he has the bowl cut. He really just has two hairstyles, which I feel like does not happen much in anime like this.
I think it generally is like whenever he's not doing great, he has a bowl cut.
I think it's whenever he's not dressed for school or for combat, he has the bowl cut. So I think like we'll see him in casual clothes with the bowl cut. Both of
those. So it's like so his Widow's Peak is not natural, is what you're telling me, is that he specifically wakes up and uses hair gel to get that style.
It's possible. I mean, the bowl cut looks messy and gross to me. So my preferred Yusuke. Not my Yusuke.
I do want to point out that we're going more in detail on his haircut than sexual assault. Quite a lot about who we are. And for all their listeners, I want you to know we understand this. Like, we are not completely unaware of who we are.
So at this point, she's cleaning all the trash off of Yusuke that his mom has suddenly accumulated. And she's
making trash for one.
She's like, she's cleaning up his body, and then she's like slowly leaning in to kiss this corpse.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And she's like slowly going in, and Sayaka, Yusuke, and Botan are all staring intently as she's leaning in and leaning in. And then something like a noise happens or something, and she's like, oh, I gotta go shopping.
Yeah, well, it's not exactly a corpse because there's a slight heartbeat, and the mom said she heard it. So,
is there a difference between her kissing a dead body and her kissing someone with a slight pulse?
Both cases, no consent whatsoever. Again, well,
one is necrophilia, one is not. They both, you're right, they both can't give consent. And also, I remember like the investigator Sayaka. She's like, well, she didn't kiss you as a like as a comatose person, so she must not care about it.
Again,
that should be the opposite.
What an own.
Like, again, the underlying Sayaka feels for Yusuke.
That definitely was a part that I thought was funny. Like, oh yeah, just because she doesn't kiss a comatose body, she must not care about it.
I think I have something written about a character named Annabelle, which I'm wondering if I made up or something. Maybe that was the investigator whose name I've forgotten already. I think I messed that up. Keiko scolds herself for being horny over Yusuke as she's leaving home or leaving his house. And, you know, the first half of the episode ends and you're like, oh, this is cute. Like, it's a little romance thing. And then Yusuke's house starts to get firebombed.
Yeah, what's with the arsonist?
It just really kind of comes out of left field for me.
It's not followed up upon. And it's like, he's a horrific person. At one point, there's like a throwaway line that it's like, this is the 12th fire, like, today.
Like, God.
Absolute chaos in the city. Like, civil order has completely broken down. Like, 12 fires in one day. And it's like the middle of it. It's like 3 p.m. when the fire. So for there are 11 fires before this.
A lot of questions. And again, it was the beginning was so cute and like romancy, and then it's like, well, here's a firebomb. enjoy the commercials.
Like, I feel like this would have, like, you could have just done it. It's like, yeah, Yusuke's mom, she, like, lit a cigarette or something and passed out or something, and that did it.
That would make absolute sense, or left, like, the stove on or something.
But there's also weird shade because it's specifically implied that, like, she didn't lock the windows.
Like, there's so many ways to shame her, and you choose not locking the windows for some reason.
Right. But again, though, the driver in the first episode and the arsonist here are, they're never, like, heard of again. Like, the arsonist is still out there.
I mean, I haven't finished the series yet, so.
Yeah.
Could come back. We come back, Kuwabara is beating up a dummy in an undeveloped plot of land somewhere.
The thing I thought nice about that is the dummy was wearing Yusuke's green outfit.
Do you think he got the actual clothes off of him? Because Kuwabara is so battle horny.
Does Kuwabara definitively know at this point that Yusuke is going to come back? Or is he just, like, still obsessing over fighting a corpse?
I think it's not clear.
I think it's like a ladder.
So I have written Keiko does the ice bucket challenge and runs into the house.
Again, being the strongest
person. Would that help, like, just dousing yourself in water and running in?
Oh, sorry, that's actually pours it on herself.
Yeah, I know. Now,
just do it on someone else.
Yeah, you said the ice bucket challenge. Like, she did it on her. Like, does that help?
It's been a bit. I mean,
I think it would hurt something. I do think it would do something.
It would definitely do something, probably not that long, because the fucking house is on fire.
It is definitely a positive. I don't know how far a positive. It might not be very much, but it would improve situation. I think
she's 14. That is, like, a reasonable thing a 14-year-old would think to do, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Damn, Keiko is hard, I have written. She's continuing through the fire trying to save Yusuke. And then Yusuke is presented that, which of course it would always come to this, is he can either sacrifice the egg and save Keiko, or keep it and she'll die. So, of course, the entire thing is, like, of course he's going to immediately sacrifice the egg to save her. It's, again, like, the whole egg thing is weird. It will come back in some way, but I think, I don't know. I guess it was a way for him to be good.
Yeah, I mean, he throws the egg and it does its magic MacGuffin. Like,
it just kind of moves.
Yeah. Yeah, my takeaway always was, like I said, we skipped over 10-15 chapters of, like, his adventure as a ghost. I always figured, like, this was originally supposed to be adventures of a kid as a ghost. And then he's like, this isn't working. I'm going to transition this to something different. And sort of, like, at that point, just said, we'll just get rid of this. We'll bring him back to life quickly and move on from there. And the anime does that in, like, 4 episodes. So,
which is probably better off.
Yeah.
So actually, Danny, to answer your question on whether or not Kuwabara knows Yusuke's coming back, when Keiko drags Yusuke's body out of the burning house, Kuwabara is just completely, like, horrified that she's dragging his corpse.
I'm sort of sick grave robber.
So no, Kuwabara did not know.
I've written Keiko just chilling with the corpse. This is a corpse in a wheelchair. I guess he gets wheeled off at some point.
Yeah, Kuwabara, I do remember Kuwabara being horrified. So yes, it's very funny. He's like, oh, this is that cute girl who hugged me and I saved, and also now she's dragging a corpse.
Of my enemy.
She keeps doing, like, my greatest enemy's corpse, always with her.
What a bro. He's just like, okay, we gotta get out of here fast. The cops are coming.
we gotta get. So it turns out that they're helped and everyone is safe. Yusuke is told, like, oh, I guess you can't come back to life now. I have Yusuke's mom continues to suck. I don't know what she does particularly here.
I think the implication is that everybody's like, oh, thank God we saved the body. Like, when he comes back, like, this will be a fun adventure to tell him. And, like, Yusuke's like, you idiots. Like, I'm not coming back anymore. Don't you know I sacrificed the egg? Like, it's actually kind of sad.
Yeah, I guess maybe I was focused on just getting through this to get to the Dark Tournament stuff. I'll be real. I like Kuwabara and his friends and everything else is just like, eh. Koenma comes back and he starts to roast Yusuke. Pretty much all, like, Yusuke, Koenma, and Botan do is just make fun of each other.
It's a great relationship, unlike the one that Yusuke and Keiko have. Just, like, ripping on each other the entire time. That's a healthy relationship.
But I assume, like, Botan's supposed to be respectful of Koenma, and she just also makes fun of him all the time. It's just a weird triangle of everyone just trying to do as much dunking as possible.
It's just like the relationship you wish you had with your boss.
Exactly.
I suppose so. But
I will say that I do believe when, like, everyone is alive again, Keiko doesn't take a lot of Yusuke's shit. She does, you know, it's not just like him sexually assaulting her and she, oh, I love you despite this. Like, yeah. Not to say that they have an incredibly healthy relationship, but she is not passive in all this.
Yeah, she, again, Keiko the good, Keiko the real. But in addition to making fun of Yusuke, Kohanma says, we can give you your life back. And they start celebrating and the episode ends.
Yeah, I think they specifically say the egg would have been bad.
They do, yeah.
That's, well, I guess, again, that comes back to the moral question of what morals are guiding this good and bad choices. But yeah, that was the first four episodes. Is there anything we didn't get to touch on that someone wanted to share or talk about?
I think we skipped over the fact of just how much of a banger that the opening song Smile Bomb is in either language you were thinking about doing.
It really is good.
It foreshadows pretty far in the future. There are scenes of the Dark Tournament in this opening, which is pretty far ahead.
Yeah, I guess they didn't want to make too many of them to try and make it last for longer. Yeah, I miss, like, this, or, like, the Rurouni Kenshin English song they did of, like, shitty 90s covers of these J-pop songs. They're very good, and I just don't know if there will be more of them ever.
Yeah, but I mean, it's good. Again, it's a wildly different tone than we all know the rest of the series will be, but it's good for what it is, and it sets up the characters it needs to set up.
This is one of the YouTube videos I will go to at 2 in the morning that Danny makes fun of me for, such as you did yesterday. Or today, I guess.
Yes, I did. Did you sure it wasn't Colors that you were up watching?
No, I'm pretty sure I wasn't watching Colors. It was that Aaron Hernandez doc.
Oh, we should post podcast. I'm going to pick your brain about it.
Ooh.
Bad choice of words.
Is that an intentional choice of words there?
Slightly.
Anyway, we don't have to talk about Aaron Hernandez. But if no one else has anything else, thank you very much for listening.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much.
Is there anything else anyone would like to share at the end?
Check me out. My name, no, don't. Do not.
I guess the last thing I'll throw out is, well, I think that opening song is a banger. I don't like the credit song.
I can't even think of what it is anymore.
I don't think there's anything. I think it's just instrumental. I was going to make a joke about find me on Twitter.
No, it talks about like the homework never ends or something.
Oh, God. Well, it's not a good ending thing. I was going to say that at the end of the episodes, they do also do the little previews for the next episode. The theme music for it is very good, and it's usually like done in character. I think I watched one of them with like Botan just like being stupid, but the ending is so bad, I usually do not actually watch to see those parts. But yeah, so thank you again for taking the time to listen. Again, my name is Alex, and do you guys want to say your names, or do you want me to? Or
you no, can.
I'm Dan. I'm Danny.
I'm Ryan.
Scott.
Great. Thank you very much.